Good evening.
Good evening.
Time to begin our class. Appreciate everyone's attendance. Those of you that are not on vacation, we are glad that you are here. I was at a preacher's luncheon this afternoon for lunch, and everyone had the same sentiment. If we could just get rid of summer, our attendance would be really good. Everybody's gone, but that's okay. That's the way it goes. We'll start our class in just a moment. Before we do, I've asked Larry Potter to say a word of prayer, and we'll get started. So, in case you're struggling to remember, if you've slept since then, we're continuing our class on sharing your faith. Technically, this is our fifth lesson, though this will be my third due to fill-ins and so forth. And I'll tell you what we're doing tonight here in just a minute. Just to kind of give you an idea of where we're going tonight, we'll be looking at Dr. North's book, Stafford North, two chapters out of it primarily. Next week, I have TBA. I can now TBA. I have somebody to do that. It was going to be Matt, and we had prepared it, and Matt handed a conference he has to go to from the school, kind of last minute, so off he goes, and with him I fill in. But I'm going to owe Bill Hamrick so much before the summer's over that I'll never get back out of it. But Bill's going to cover this coming week on TBA, on whatever it is he wants to talk about, because it's short notice, and I appreciate, Matt and I both appreciate you doing that, very much appreciated. Week after will be Vacation Bible School. Please put that on your calendar and don't forget. And then we're going to continue with Dr. North's book. August 6th, if you're interested in a treat, our very own Lonnie White is coming back to give us a lesson on personal evangelism. I coerced him into making the trip up. I got Lonnie because he's one of the most naturally talented person I've ever known when it comes to just developing contacts with people, setting up Bible studies. For me, I have to make a very conscious effort, and if I'm not intentionally thinking about it, it just doesn't happen. Lonnie seems to do it like breathing air, and so I'm anxious to hear, or for you to hear, I won't be here, but for you to hear whatever it is that Lonnie has to say about that, and I'm sure none of you will give him a hard time in my absence. I'm sure he'll have nothing mean to say about me in my absence, so that'll be good for everybody except me. Okay, so tonight, as I mentioned, the book we're going to look at, it'll take us several Wednesdays to go through this particular book because it's got some really practical information in it of all the ones I've decided to kind of go through with you. This is Evangelizing Your Community by Stafford North. It's down at Oklahoma Christian. It was originally published in 73, so he's been at it a while, but he's done several revisions. The most recent that I have is 2007, which is good because he's got a section on there about make sure you maintain a church website. I thought, well, he didn't write that in 73, so he must have kind of updated a few things as he's gone. But it's a pretty helpful book in that it's very practical. Some of us, 3.5 years ago, I think, got to go over to Crosstown, and he gave a brief presentation with just kind of some of the highlights out of his books and his particular method. We've taken some of it and done kind of our own thing with it a few times here, some of our attempts to do some evangelism. So it's a pretty helpful book. Like any of the books I read on this subject, there are things I like and things I don't, and I'll tell you which ones those are. But as books go, this one's pretty helpful. On top of that, before I finally graduate, with my master's degree I'm working on from Oklahoma Christian, I have to take his class called Evangelizing Your Community. Guess what the textbook is? So I had to read it anyway eventually. I've been putting off that class. It's going to be the last one I take probably. And so it was good to get to go through that. Maybe I'll know something by the time I get there. We're going to look at chapters 3 and 4. And the reason we're going to look at chapters 3 and 4 is because out of the book, chapters 1 and 2 do not help me much. So I'm going to give you a one-slide presentation of chapters 1 and 2, tell you everything I know about it. If it sounds interesting to you, I'd be happy to make you copies of pages out of those two chapters. But to me, and I don't say this to be mean, to me it's kind of useless. It's not helpful. His particular method of presenting the gospel to someone, which is what this is, to him makes perfect sense. And he said, this is so easy. Anyone can do it. See? And this is his method. I have to memorize this for the class I'm going to take later, so I've got to make sure I know all these symbols. But what it is, he tried to develop a system of symbols that if you were sitting at a table somewhere with someone and you had a napkin and a pen, you could just draw out through kind of 10 little icons the basic narrative of the gospel that we're trying to convey. And these are his little symbols. So the first one, you got the smiley face with G. Anyone want to guess what that stands for? Good would be a good guess, but it's God. In the beginning, God and man have a relationship, right? God makes man and we're together. And then the next one is not so smiley face and question mark. And that's when Dr. North tells you about then God gave us the power of free will to make choices. What did we choose? Arrow towards S. We chose sin. So humans chose sin, and that creates the problem that this story is trying to resolve. Sin, now we've got big G, sin, and frowny face. Okay, so what does sin do? Separates us from God. See, it's pretty simple to pick up. I would never have thought of these symbols, but okay. P or F, any guesses what the next statement you want to know is? Passer face. That's pretty good. I like that. I'm going to write to Stafford and say I've got a better version of this for you from Lenora Hamrick. Pass or fail. Yeah, that's right. The P or F is punish or forgive. And that's the question. What is God going to do about the sin that man has committed? Well, is he going to punish us or is he going to forgive us? And that's the big question. What's the answer to that question? Well, we've got a cross. Jesus is this God coming down to the cross as a human, and he dies in the place of those of us that are guilty of sin. And then what we're supposed to do, just like we chose sin before, is to choose the cross now. We're supposed to choose Jesus. How do we do that? F plus O. Any guesses? Faith and obedience. There you go. So faith plus obedience is our way, it's how we choose the cross. We choose the cross not by saying, yes, please, I'll take that, but through faith and obedience. And then God takes away sin, and we get a smiley face again because we're back together with God. And then there's a smiley face and a big C. Any guess on that one? Our in Christ, and that makes us happy. So this is, if you sit down, I've always wanted to try it. Just find somebody who doesn't know Stafford and say, could you tell me the gospel and see if he would get out a napkin and do this? But anyway, he says this is his kind of 10-step explanation that he can draw on a napkin or whatever, you know, the back of a receipt or something, and just explain to someone the basics of the gospel story. If that is helpful to you, I'm more than happy to make you a copy of that page, and you can memorize it and write it on all the napkins in Glenpool, and, you know, more power to you. But for me, that's just not particularly helpful. I would never think, you know, I could explain this to you, but I think you'll understand it better if I could show you some smiley faces. That will really fix it. So for me, not very helpful, but that's chapters 1 and 2. Chapters 3 and 4 are much more helpful, and that's where he gets to very practical terms. Now that we know what the gospel is, how does a church become evangelistic? And in particular, how do we evangelize our community? Two passages we want to read. And I just have a chunk of them on the screen, but I want to read the whole passage. Somebody would turn to Acts 2:47, and somebody else to Acts 5:13. If you hear Stafford give a presentation on this, you cannot listen to him without him making reference to these two passages, at least Acts 2:47, because that's the central point of his philosophy on evangelism. It comes out of these two passages. So whoever has Acts 2:47, what Stafford will say is, what comes before the Lord adding to the church daily? Having favor with all the people. So the church has become, through these things that are happening in verses 42 through 47, and you should read the whole section, through doing these things, the church has gained favor, positive regard, with the community at large. Okay? And that leads to the Lord's adding to the church. The church is growing. People are being converted to Christ, at least in part because of the positive regard that people have towards these Christians in these early days of the church. Persecution hasn't started yet. We haven't got to that scene in Acts yet, right? This is very early on. People like those Christians. They like nice folks. Okay. Someone else has Acts 5:13. Here we have a little more ambivalence. Well, we're not sure we want to be one. We're not sure what to do with them, but they have the regard, high regard of the people. So up through Acts 5, the church has enemies, but the people as a whole, the community in Jerusalem, looks at these people who believe in Christ and say, well, these are good folks, these are nice folks, I'm interested, I have a good opinion of them. Favorability is high, is what the poll would say, right? So that's what Dr. North is interested in. He says, would that be true of our churches today? If you walked around Glenpool and said, do you have a positive or negative regard towards the Glenpool Church of Christ, or C, who's that, right? Dr. North says, I don't know if we would fare as well as they would, not pick on us particularly, but churches of Christ, we have either bad press or no press. Too often is the case, and neither one of those are very helpful. So what Stafford wants us to think about is, are there practical things the church can do to more fully accomplish this result? To very intentionally try to make sure the church is well looked upon in the community, and so that when we go out with the gospel, they don't already start out with a chip on their shoulder against us or know nothing about us, which makes it that much harder. But they start out with, oh, Glenpool Church of Christ, I've heard of those nice folks. I'd listen. So that's the basic premise of what he's trying to demonstrate. The way he does that, and this is the most helpful chart in the book, if you can't read it, I apologize, but again, I'd happily make you a copy of it if you'd like to see it. He has these layers of circles that moves towards conversion and church growth. And it starts out really general, and the two we look at today will be very general. So it starts out with public information. People have to know that you exist. If you're the most best-kept secret in town, then you're not being able to do a lot of evangelism because nobody knows who you are. Same reason businesses do advertising. Not because they're trying to convince you their product is good, but because you'll never care about their product if you don't know who they are. Right? But if you know the name, then it's okay. When I worked at Factory Direct in Oklahoma City selling furniture, and I'll talk about sales a little bit tonight because it does apply to some of this, we often would say, we're one of the Mathis Brothers stores. Why? No one had ever heard of Factory Direct, but they knew who Mathis Brothers was. And so that helped build, you know, rapport. Oh, we know who that is. That's a brand we recognize. So, public information is step number one. We'll talk about that more in detail in a moment. Christian living is step number two, that the members of the church have to be in that community acting in a way that advances the cause of Christianity. They have to behave in a way that advances the church. And then further from that, when we'll get in further weeks, he talked about conversational evangelism, ministry evangelism, friendship evangelism, teaching the gospel itself, which is where he gets his symbols and napkin out, where you actually get to tell someone about the gospel. And then finally, the center circle to me is the one we overlook the most, conversion and follow-up. And he's very adamant that if your church does not have a follow-up program, then you are just going to watch baptized people walk back out the door and never see them again. And having seen that, Bill, you've seen that a lot? Yeah, I mean, it's just, anywhere you go, it's a plague that you baptize people and then where they go? I never heard from them again. Because we're not being as aggressive in this area as we are some of the others. So this chart is kind of how he breaks it down. And he says, through each of these steps, not any one of the layers of the onion get you there, okay? You got to have every one of them in place. If you skip a step, then people never get to conversion because there's something hindering them from the gospel. It doesn't matter how good a presenter of the gospel you are. Maybe you've got a fantastic gospel presentation, and you've got a great, say you hire someday a really good preacher, and he does a good job. None of that matters if we haven't done the first boxes, right? With the first circles. We've got to get those taken care of. Okay, so in terms of public information, what kind of things was he talking about? He's got a list of about 10 things that he says relate to public information, and some of them might surprise you. In our graduate program, we laugh about a couple of them because they seem pretty obvious. It's obvious unless you've ever been somewhere, where they didn't do it. And then you realize, oh, that's a big step. You can't skip it. So public information, step number one, Dr. North says, make the building attractive and inviting. What does he mean by that? Well, this is a picture of a, I don't know if you can see it real well, of a church building I'm very familiar with. I'll change names to protect the guilty. Very wonderful group of people inside. But when you look at the building, and you can't see it in this picture, it's not really crisp, but this is a gravel parking lot. They had trucks pulling around in their parking lot in the front, so to keep big trucks from doing a U-turn in their parking lot, they put up this very unattractive metal pole fence that looked like it was put together on a Saturday, because it was. This metal post right here used to be in front of this condenser unit to keep people from pulling into it. Someone did pull into it, and rather than putting it back up, they leaned it against the side of the building. If you could see carefully, you'd see grass growing into the sidewalk all the way up and down. The flower garden in the front, it has intentionally planted flowers that look like weeds. And someone worked really hard on it, but it's as if they went to Lowe's and said, can you give me the plant that looks the most like a weed? And that's what they planted in front of the church and worked really hard on it. And every time people saw it, they said, do you need to trim that up? No, we planted that. Okay, so getting close to home here, right? This is a place I know about, very familiar with. And some other things. I mean, this is actually, after some improvements were done, this is a new roof that was put on 5 or 6 years ago. Before that, we don't even want to talk about it. The inside matches. Now, how does a building, there's nothing wrong with it. It's not condemned or anything. It's not going to fall on you. God's people meet inside and worship. Okay? And if you ask them, why don't you spend a lot of money on that? You know what they'll say? They'll say, we've got more important things to do with the Lord's money. We like to do evangelism. They run a school of biblical studies. They support good works. And they say, well, if we spend a bunch of money on our building, we couldn't do all that. What happens when they have a guest? Several things happen. When they have a guest, the first thing that happens is they pull in and then pull back out and leave. It's because it's a place that doesn't inspire confidence. It doesn't make you think, wow, these people really care about this place. It makes you think, look like there are weeds out there in the front garden. Okay. When you go inside and it kind of looks the same, you confirm that, right? Why are there stains on all the tiles, right? No one's replaced them. Okay. Why are the lights out? No one's replaced that light over there. Stuff like that. And it's not that they didn't love God or love Jesus or care. It was just because they thought they had more important things to do, and that wasn't important. They met there. They were happy with it. Why wouldn't anybody else be? The answer is nobody else was. And people would come. If they came once, if they actually came inside, we quite often did not see them again. Okay. And you say, why does that matter? We believe in the gospel, not a church building. And I say, amen. But you can't have something that is a distraction from the gospel. I don't need a building that's a positive. I just don't want a building that's a negative. That starts out with, I don't care what that guy has to say, I want to get out of this room as fast as I possibly can. If that's what our building is doing and our grounds, then we're in a lot of trouble. It doesn't matter what happens in the pulpit or anywhere else, if people are trying to leave as quickly as possible because it's kind of scary. It looks like people don't care. So that's a big deal. You and me maybe wouldn't care. I worshipped in that building and I didn't care. I mean, I thought, why don't people like this place? To me, they had great sermons there. I preached them. And, we had a good little congregation, right? It didn't bother me. But visitors were bothered. And they didn't come back. And it was a problem. And very well-meaning people let it get that way, whom I love very dearly. Okay? So, with our new auditorium, just comment on that. During the whole design progress and process, I mean, we were very practical, very utilitarian. It was not our goal to build a massive cathedral, an edifice to our human pride or anything. But we did say we'd kind of like it to look like a church, and we'd like people to drive by and say, oh, there's a church there. You know. And that was important to us because we didn't want it to be a hindrance. We wanted it to be effective to help us do what we need to do, not hurt us. So North says, that's important. Mow your yard. Things like that matter. Can't tell you how many stories I've got about preachers in little towns that find out, what do you mean nobody mows the yard? Oh, the preacher mows the yard. Yeah, that's right. So this is, you know, a typical small town problem. This is in Oklahoma City. How many nice church buildings do you think there are in Oklahoma City? This is in a suburban area with new housing additions, $250,000 homes all around it. Think any of them go there? Use good signs to give people helpful information. I found actually a Church of Christ sign I thought was pretty funny. What does that say on that sign?
God laid it down.
We need to talk about your English because I don't think it says anything. right? So we put up our marquee and we misspelled words. Karen does a real good job. I'm not picking at you. But what we are saying is, this is just an example, something silly, right, to make you laugh. But why is it important to have a sign? Right now, in our building progress, we're looking at signs and getting quotes. Why would we spend money on a sign? We all know where it is. We want people driving up down Elwood to know where it is. We want them to know when we meet and what's going on there. And we don't want them to think that we're illiterate, right? I mean, that these are things, it's simple things, should it matter? No, it shouldn't matter. If everyone in this building was illiterate, but we loved God and had the gospel, nobody should care. Do they care? Yeah, they do. Okay? That's the way it works. So just having a good sense about we're going to put a sign up, it's going to be useful, it's going to be attractive. Yeah, you mean cosmetic matters? Yep, it does. Because we don't want it to be a distraction. Can I go back to this one? I've got a sign story. The sign was a metal sign held up by, not zip ties, but something one step above that. Just a metal piece of sheet metal, and it had letters painted on it that had been painted there in the 60s and had rusted away so long ago that you really couldn't read it. So some people said, we need to get a better sign. So they took the sign down, and they were going to sandblast it, take all the rust off, repaint it, and then put on the nice letters. A year later, the sign got put back up, and for a year, think about that building with no sign on it that says anything about what it is. What is it? Possibly a meth lab, but it's not a church. I mean, you have no idea what that is without a sign, right? You've got to have a sign. Lovely people. Love every one of them. Got to have a sign. It's got to be useful.
Where in Creek County did you take it?
Yeah. Yeah.
I know that's my county.
And that could be, yeah, that could be vandalism. This is an update to Stafford's book that probably wasn't in the 73 edition. Have a good website. Make sure that it brings up information. And several of us kind of help with the website here. And then I ask people to look at it every so often. And I think it was Chris Patterson who emailed me one day. He said, hey, I looked at the website. I said, yeah, what do you think? I'm really proud of it. Hey, what do you think, Chris? And Chris said, you know, it doesn't have where we're located on it, right? So, yeah, it turns out there are things like that that are easy to overlook, and you go back in and say, okay. And anytime you guys send me an email and say, hey, did you know our website doesn't have, I'm very happy. You don't offend me at all. I'm happy to go look and find and see what's going on because it's helpful, and it's easy to overlook stuff. And so you need all the eyes on it you can get to kind of help out, but you want to have a good and useful website. Big churches are spending tens of thousands of dollars on website, and considering it money well spent. We're not spending quite that much. But considering it money well spent, and here's why. Because for most of these young families we're always looking for today, the first stop when you're looking for something is where? The internet. Brother Wetzel. Google. When was the last time you looked in an actual paper phone book? Huh? A few years. Yeah, I mean, it's just not done, right? If they don't have a website, they don't exist to me. Right? So I'm going to keep looking. So it's a big deal. Some of you guys go on vacation, and you want to stop at a church maybe while you're out of town. Where do you look?
Online.
It's so convenient. If you don't have that, it's a big deal. Yeah, Johnny's still, that's why we're still in the phone book. We're still believers in it. Carl and Johnny will know how to find us. But whatever works. Number four I thought was pretty good. Treat visitors well from the moment they come to the parking area and make them feel welcome. I thought this sign was funny. This is just my strange sense of humor. Come be a part. of our family, as in not a part, but a part. You be a part over there, right? And sometimes we do make visitors feel that way, that we really want guests, and then that we want them to leave us alone, right? We really want them to come in and stay over there. I have a good friend who preaches elsewhere, and I'll change names to protect the guilty, and he says, our congregation really wants young families. Our congregation really doesn't want kids. That when they have kids there, they get frustrated, that kids make messes, kids are loud, kids are a nuisance, right? And so we get grumpy about it, and then we chase our young families off, and we make our guests feel unwelcome. Okay, so this is an issue, right? It's a big deal, making our guests feel welcome. A couple of things about that statement I think are interesting. One thing I would change if I were rewriting this book myself, I would banish. If I had the power to change your vocabulary, to go right into your brain and change everyone's vocabulary, I would banish the word visitor from church vocabulary and replace it with the word guest. What's the difference? It's a subtle thing. Visitor is, they're an alien. They're a foreigner, someone that comes in and then leaves. And they really have no business being here, but we put up with them. That's a visitor. What is a guest? Make yourself at home, right? How do we want people to think of themselves, and how do we want to think of them? Guests. You have come into our home. Ladies, I won't even ask the men because you don't know. Ladies, when you have someone come over as a guest, how do you treat them? Yeah, I mean, there are things that are acceptable in the world of hospitality that ought to be at least as true when our guests are here. So when we have people come in, that means, now I will step on toes, prepare your feet for damage. That means you have to get out of your seat and be uncomfortable and go talk to someone you don't know. Okay. It means you need to help your elders and deacons and ministers out, because there's a bunch of us, an increasingly number of us, not tonight but other days, right? And it could be that someone got my attention of something else and I didn't meet that new person. So how can you help out? So Paula comes in with her family, and I say, oh, yes, very good to meet you. Have you met our minister, right? Have you met, and you find someone who's standing around, one of our elders, minister, whoever, and you make an introduction. You talk to them a little bit, and you find someone they might know or have a connection with. Going back to furniture sales a minute, I try not to bring up furniture sales because it makes you think I'm a salesman. But in furniture sales, you get to the front door, you wait in a line, you're the salesman, and in comes a customer. And they immediately hate you because you are the guy at the front door. And what do they say? Just looking. Everybody's just looking, right? Nobody's looking for anything in a furniture store. They just come in to be there because everyone likes to be there, apparently. And they blow you off and move away. And a salesman who accepts that makes no money, okay? So what do you learn to do? I'm an introvert. I don't make friends easily. So what do you have to learn to do to get paid as a commission salesman? What you do is, when they came in the door, you immediately looked at them and said, what can I talk to this person about? So the wife comes in, she blows right past me to go look whatever she's looking for. The husband's job is to say, just look and leave us alone. And before he could get it out, I would say, notice you got an OU shirt on. Did you see the game? And we would talk for 60 seconds about football and not furniture. Now at the end of talking about football, we're best friends. And then I say, what's your wife looking for? Okay, and that's when we get there. The point is, you have to learn to intentionally ask them something about them. Everybody likes to talk about themselves. When somebody comes into this building, they've come into our building. This is not door knocking where they're going to slam a door in your face. They, on purpose, got up and got in a car and came to our building. It's okay to talk to them. It's okay to say, who are you? Who are you people? What do you do for a living? And then if you find something out that makes a connection with people we have here, introduce them. Oh, you work, your kids go to Jinx School. Well, did you know Keith Riggs over here is a teacher over there? He's one of the coaches at Jinx School. Have you met Keith? Oh, yeah. And now they know Keith. They know somebody here already. They didn't even know it. And you find a connection, and you introduce them. Introduce them to the minister. Introduce them to the elder. Because we're not everywhere at once. Okay. So making them feel welcome, I think, is very important. Treating them like a guest. The other thing I was going to comment on, different ministers and different churches have different philosophies about the parking lot. As I told you, I'm an introvert. I need my hula hoop of space. I don't like to be rushed or crowded. So if I open my door, I walk into a church for the first time, and I pull in the parking lot, open my door, and there's somebody standing there, I might close it again. That's just me. But some people, Dan Jenkins, who I put in our bulletin every so often, he's just adamant that any church he works with, you greet him in the parking lot. They get out of the car, and you're there. How are you? Good to have you this morning. Let me show you where the Bible classes are. And that's the way they do it. And he's very successful with it. Dan makes it work. For me, I would feel very awkward. So I prefer to give them a little space, you know, decide if they actually want to come in the doors or not. But when they get in the door, they're fair game. Bob can hug them, and, you know, we can start talking to them and do all the things that we do because they came to us. This is not door knocking where you start out at a disadvantage. They got in the car on Sunday morning and came here, though they didn't have any reason to that they know of. So you get to talk to them and greet them and make them feel welcome as guests, not visitors. Yeah, they're visitor cards. We were just talking about some changes to the cards, so maybe we'll print guest cards in the future. Maybe we'll make member cards so we know that you're here, too. That'd be all right. That'd be fun. A couple other things he suggests. Number five, serve your community in ways to build goodwill. So as a church, you're looking for things. Can you think of anything this congregation does that helps the community? School supplies. I was waiting for Johnny Riggs to jump on. Yeah, school supplies, right? We do a school supply drive, and we have someone take it down there and you know, put it in their hands and say, you know, here it is. And it's an exciting thing. And it's something that helps. We've done coat drives and stuff like that before. And we could do more. And those are things that we look for, that you look for an opportunity to be the congregation that helps people. That's who you want to be in your community. Make a conscious effort to be sure representatives from your congregation are involved in a wide range of community organizations and activities. This one, I like where he's going with it, but I have no idea how to do it. Is it nice when members of the church are involved in lots of community organizations? Yeah, sure is. And some in Oklahoma, I got a scholarship as a senior from the Kiwanis, and I went to the little dinner they put on to receive the award, and who says the prayer? Cecil Sullivan, one of the elders of the Church of Seminole, because he's a Kiwana, right? And maybe that's why I got the scholarship. I don't know. But anyway, we had people involved. There wasn't it wasn't a group in town that didn't have some of our people in it. And so anything they did, our people got to influence that. It was kind of nice. That said, I don't feel comfortable getting up in the pulpit saying, now we need some more people in the Kiwanis, so who wants to volunteer? I'm not comfortable doing that. But by all means, if you find opportunities within your schedule, most of you are too busy anyway. I want you here more, to be honest with you. I want you doing less. I want you here doing things and not as much busy as other things. But anyway, if you find opportunity in your schedule to be involved in something in the community that's good, and allows you to be a good Christian influence, by all means, take advantage of it and let people know you're a Christian. Don't make it a secret. That drives me crazy. People doing good things and no one knows they attend the Glenpool Church of Christ. Yeah, let them know, right? It's a good thing that you're here. Make an impact on the neighborhoods where your members live. That's very important. It's a place where we have a leg up over a lot of congregations. I told you I was at a preacher's luncheon earlier today, and I heard the same complaint I hear from the same preachers. Anybody who has a church they work with inside of a city area, so I'll be candid, I'm not trying to pick on anybody, 10th and Rockford, 29th and Yale, Crosstown, all have the exact same problem. All of their members live somewhere else, and they all drive in. So how do they have an impact on the area around their building where they meet? Well, they have a hard time with that. So I was talking to Robert, and Robert over at Crosstown. He's not here, don't look. I was talking to Sling. So Robert Prater over at Crosstown was talking to me, and he said, yeah, we're having that same problem everybody has. You know, with how do you work in this community when all of our people live somewhere else? Well, a lot of you actually live around here, and so that should be the easier part, that if you want to invite somebody to VBS, I know Lenora shaking her head, but if you want to invite somebody to VBS, conceivably your neighbor could drive here, and we're not asking them to drive an hour. Come to VBS with me. I go to church an hour from here, right? No, it's 5 minutes away. Come to VBS. So conceivably, that's helpful to us. And that's an advantage we have. So by all means, take advantage of that. Work locally in the neighborhoods that are here with us. Make use of local media and mailings to help people know about your church. Just making sure people know that we exist. You could spend a lot of money on that and get nothing out of it if you're not careful. And I'll mention this later. Sometimes people confuse good marketing with good evangelism. They are not the same thing. But if you find opportunities, we have a pretty good relationship with the South County Leader. We've done some ads in their paper before. Once in a while, their advertising editor calls me up and says, hey, we've got an open spot. Nobody wants it. Give it to you for half price. And I usually say, yeah, okay, we'll buy it. And we put an ad of some kind in the paper at a cheap price because they know to call us. I usually say yes. And we get it cheap. Okay. So it's, what does it do? Well, it reminds people there's a Glenpool Church Christ, and it's down here. Here's where we're located. I don't consider that. I don't think anybody's ever read that and said, you know what, I think I want to be baptized. I saw that ad in the paper. No, it doesn't work that way. But it helps with people knowing that we exist, and that's helpful. Yes? For everyone but Jim, no. Really, I mean, seriously, I would not want to pass up an opportunity if there are some people in the community getting together having a Bible study and they'd let me in the room. I'd love to be there. And I'll accept the terms of the meeting, right? And that is, I'm not running the show, so I'm not going to talk about everything I want to talk about. I'm not going to agree with everything that's said, but somewhere in the course of an hour, I'm going to get a point in somewhere, and hopefully build the confidence in the people there that, you know, that Ben Williams guy, he says stuff that makes sense sometimes, and maybe want to ask me another question sometimes. So I think those are good things to take advantage of where they're prudent, and you have to use good sense. If you can see it's a total waste of your time, then don't waste your time. But in a lot of cases, if you've got some honest people that just happen to be getting together for Bible study, yeah, man, I'll pass on that. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, be aware of that. It's everyone in that room is trying to persuade everybody else in that room of something, and you're one of those people. So just be aware of that, absolutely. But I think we do more to engage more than less. There's a risk in evangelism. Yeah. And I know that that has been done in small in the past, and I know for a fact that the Church of Christ preacher did not miss that. Yeah. So, is that? My friend Wayne Price, who preached for years at McLeod, was telling me one time he was invited to the local ministerial alliance, and they said, Wayne, why don't you come down and join us? We don't talk about the Bible or anything. And he said, if you talk about the Bible, I'd be there every time. So some of those things are really useful, and some of them are not. I mean, if it's productive, you know, by all means, I'd be happy to be there. If I could be an influence. If I'm there to sign off on some activity they want to do and put our name on it, then I'm not as excited. But if there's something that good that could come of it, there's not any place I'm afraid to go as far as, I don't think I'm going to get stained by being around the wrong people talking about the Bible. I mean, there's no place I'd be afraid to go if it's productive. And you just have to use prudence. Yeah, you just got to use some prudence. Sometimes, I mean, through those organizations, you get to know of community groups that are helping people in need. So sometimes somebody comes by the building and I say, I wish I knew where to send you. Well, those groups let you know. Yeah, there's a group down here that does something like that. And it's nice to be aware of it and know what's going on, but again, you just have to use prudence. Mahatma Gandhi carried a Bible with him most of his life in his luggage. He always had one. He was a Hindu, practicing Hindu. And he was very famous for saying, I like your Jesus and I like your Bible. I'm not so fond of your Christians. That's a dangerous truth that is too often the case. Definitely. Just be sensible. What's the line from Bambi? If you haven't got something nice to say, don't say anything. Yeah. Good advice. Yeah. Jerry? Stuff like that. Our dear sweet Karen Brown goes down to the Chamber of Commerce every so often and drops off a big stack of flyers that go into every new member resident in Glenpool is supposed to get one of these little bags from the Chamber. I need to find somebody that's moved here recently and ask. They're supposed to get a bag from the Chamber, and it has our little flyer in there. Yeah, that's how they found us. There was somebody that was talking to us. Yeah, we saw your flyer in the bag the Chamber gave us. So stuff like that is very helpful. Okay. With the few minutes we got left, the other category that he puts in this kind of broad circle is Christian living. And I thought he had some good things to say about it. First of all, the elders of a congregation, and just as a side note, Stafford is really emphatic throughout the book that if your elders are not leading the charge, what does he say? The congregation will never be more evangelistic than the elders. And so if they're not leading the charge, and even in delegating, and I'm not saying they have to do everything that gets done, but if they're not at least delegating jobs out and being aware of what needs to be done, then we've got problems. So the elders of a congregation need to develop a strategy for nurturing every member in Christian living. That they are very intentionally saying, here are some areas where we think we could develop as better Christians. Quote from the book, page 39, since elders of the church are charged with feeding the flock, the elders, educational director, and minister need to work together to be sure that there is a coordinated plan for teaching the congregation how to demonstrate Christian living wherever they are. So the example he gives is maybe the elders think, you know, we need to know more about honesty. We want our people to be honest everywhere they are. Preacher's going to do a six-week sermon series on honesty. In our education program, we're going to have a lesson on Christian living or something. And they're very thoughtful about this is an area we think we could do better on. And so we look for those opportunities. Then he goes on to say, help your members to be aware of the situations in which they can demonstrate such qualities and encourage them to make the most of such times. The great big lie that you are told by our culture is that it's fine for you to be a Christian here, just leave it here. Don't be a Christian where it's going to bother people. If you're not bothering people, you're not doing it right. And I don't mean be a nag, don't be a pain, but if people aren't aware of your Christianity, at some level, are you a Christian? If no one knows it, is there such a thing as a secret Christian? The Bible talks about those that believed in Christ but would not confess him for fear of the Pharisees. Were they Christians? Think about that one. Chew on that. Let me look at these real quick. Places where you can be examples in local schools. A lot of people there you get to interact with and be an influence with. At the workplace. Again, I'm not saying you stop doing your job and start preaching up and down the halls of your workplace, but being a good Christian example that people look to you and say, there is a fine example of the Glenpool Church of Christ in the neighborhood where you live. Be a good neighbor. Okay? They should remember you as a good neighbor. And that guy goes to the Church of Christ. Ball games. Don't be that parent. Don't be the one they're throwing out, right? And there goes the deacon from the Church of Christ. No, we want them. And other locations, hospital, bank, stores, places where you have, you know, regular interactions with people. Good example. Mention you're from the church. I enjoy, sometimes my paper check is a pain, and I think, why couldn't we do direct deposit? But I also enjoy that every Monday I get to take that check down, says Glenpool Church of Christ. Oh, hey, Ben, how you doing? You know, or hey, Celine, actually, usually, sorry. Yeah, it's usually Celine. But they know who we are, and that's the preacher from the Church of Christ. That's his wife, and they deposit their check at the local bank, and they see us, and they give Lucas a sucker, and off we go, right? So these are things, interactions that are helpful. Okay, pros and cons, very quickly. What's the good things about these two chapters we talked about? It's very basic, very practical, very goal-oriented. I mean, you can look at those steps and say, it's all stuff we could do. Nothing outrageous, nothing even really expensive. It's just stuff that's very easy to do and sensible. And it's a good first step in the right direction. Cons, don't be confused. Good marketing does not equal good evangelism. There are people out there that are salesmen in this area who just think if you get the biggest sign possible and every billboard and every commercial, then you've done great evangelism. It's not the same thing. Good marketing is not the same thing as good evangelism. It's just one piece of the puzzle and has to be done in proportion to everything else. A church focused too much on any of these items becomes a country club instead of a church. You can turn yourselves into the Kiwanis. Nothing against the Kiwanis, by the way. You can turn yourselves into the Kiwanis instead of being the church, if you're not careful, where we are just a community organization. If we're not saving souls, we have no purpose to our existence. So beware of that. And finally, community work. Look for real needs, not invented needs. Look for things that actually need to be done in your community rather than just assuming people need something or this is something we'd like to do, so let's go do it. Look and see what are the actual needs in the Glenpool area and then try to meet those needs. Okay, appreciate your attention.